You are listening to Mommying While Muslim podcast, where hosts Uzma and Zeba share their personal stories of mommying in a post 9/11 world. This podcast is designed with the Muslim American mom in mind, so grab a cup of coffee and pull up to their table.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mommying While Muslim podcast. This is Uzma Jafri.
And this is Zeba Hassan. I am actually videoing on my vacation, and I wanted to put myself in front of my beautiful backdrop because that's all I've been able to see of this pretty town called Park City, Utah, because we're all battling a little bit of that altitude sickness and have to stay close to a bathroom, if you know what I mean.
I feel so bad for that, and apologies for the whirring in my background because I have some work being done downstairs. So yeah, it sucks to be sick on vacation. Do you want to tell everybody about your landing?
So, you know, we were very excited. We had just left, you know, we've broken this trip down into multiple pieces because we haven't seen our family in a couple of years now. It'll be 2 years. And I wanted to have a very good time with each set of family members. So we had a whirlwind time in the Chicagoland area with my family, with the nieces and nephews. It was so great to see them. Got on a plane. By the way, we were the only ones masking indoors. I made it a priority to do that, even though we are vaccinated, but my younger two are not. And so every time we would go somewhere indoors, I made it a point to make sure we mask, we wash our hands. We're still doing all of those things, Uzma. Still doing all of those things. We were on our flight from Chicago to Salt Lake City, Utah. It is a longer flight than we're used to. I think it was like almost 4 hours. And as we were landing, literally, as we were starting our initial descent, you know, that sound goes up, we're starting our descent, my number four started vomiting all over, and had to wear my sweater as a little makeshift skirt, because normally I pack clothes in their carry-ons, you know, as a just in case when they were little. But by God's grace, mashallah, we haven't had any accidents until this time. And it's been kind of down mountain, because we are in the mountains, and I'm not going to say downhill from there. But the beauty is we're all together. We're cuddling sick, and we have a change of scenery, which is God's blessing. So we're not going to complain about it, but we've all had a little bit of stomach upset since we've landed. I think it was the Devon Street food, but that could just be me saying that. I don't quite know, because we're still feeling it a couple of days later. So I'm hopeful that your week is a little bit better than ours, though with this view, how can you actually complain?
I'm enjoying your view, and I'm doing it from just south of you. So that's really nice. Through the screen, I will live vicariously through you. I have just been reading and catching up on work, scheduling out the rest of the year. So that's always very, you know, with me and my OCD, that's very comforting to me to get all of that lined up and done. And at the same time, like when I hit my goals for the day, for the work day, like just curling up with a book, is always such a really, really good feeling. And what I finished most recently was The Blue Between Sky and Water by Susan Abulhawa. And you guys remember, like about 6 weeks ago, I was talking about mornings in Jenin with her. And I think that for those of us who want more coverage of Palestinian rights and want people to understand Palestinian rights, sometimes the news is just, you know, people will say, oh, I don't like politics, or I don't like this or that. This is a very human story, Mornings in Jenin, and then also along the same lines, the life of Palestinian refugees and cell memory and generational trauma. I think it's really important to read The Blue Between Sky and Water as well. So those are my plugs. We are not getting paid by the publishers. Those are just my book reads for the week. So a lot better than getting vomited on in the middle of a flight.
True. True, true. But you know, the truth of the matter is, whenever I go on vacation is when I can do my fun reads. And so I'm going to write that book down because I love doing that. So when I'm not reading for the podcast or for school, I love to like try out new authors. And I, you know, again, another book plug for me is I'm starting this trilogy. I'm almost done with the first book, started it yesterday, called The City of Brass. And it's a Muslim author, and it's essentially like a fantasy magical series. And I have to say, I was a little skeptical because other than Harry Potter, I'm not a big fantasy person, but I have been devouring this book as I've been cuddling with sick kiddos. And I have to say, it's very, very good. And I highly recommend that as well. If someone's looking for a fun summer read, when you're not trying to read all the depressing news that we sometimes have to read. So two good book options for everybody joining us here today. And I am always curious as to what our soapbox for this week is, because I know I've been a little bit under the radar as far as what's going on in the news. So Uzma, could you tell us a little bit about what our soapbox for this week is?
So our soapbox for the week is pretty much what you touched on earlier, and that was wearing your mask, even though the adults in your house are vaccinated, your younger two are not. And so previously the CDC said, you know, if you were not vaccinated, you could go out, and all these mask mandates were lifted, except like we're federally mandated, like airports and airplanes, right? And then certain businesses had the right to ask you to mask up or don't come in. Well, you know, we saw people start taking their masks off. As soon as that mask mandate was lifted, we saw our cases of COVID go up. Yes, primarily in unvaccinated people. However, we're finding out now with the variant that we probably should get the masks back on, because within a month of taking them off, if it's spiking and we're seeing more cases in fully vaccinated people, maybe this Delta variant is something to consider. So on July 27th, the CDC came up with a mandate where it's not really a mandate, it is a more, it's a stronger suggestion to wear masks, even if you are vaccinated. And then one of the important things that it did change was that if you have exposure to somebody with COVID-19, even if you are without symptoms, go get tested within 3 to 5 days. Before that, prior to July 27th, they said, oh, until you have symptoms, don't worry about it. But now we know that we need to get tested. I will say that my state came out with a mandate yesterday to say that all K through 12 students and teachers, regardless of vaccination status, will wear masks in school, which is a huge relief to a large portion of the parent student population, and arguably the teacher population, and then a huge source of conflict for another very large and significant group who is more worried about their right to unmask than their right to live, apparently. But I'm not going to make any value judgments on it. I will say that we trust science here on the podcast, and we will be wearing our masks and do continue to wear our masks regardless of the fact that we are fully vaccinated. Our soapbox is certainly to continue to follow suit with masks and all COVID precautions to make sure that we put this thing to bed. And that's it for today.
I don't know about you, but I have to say, you know, like I've now heard in the last 2 weeks, two of my friends that have been vaccinated have gotten COVID again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's something happening. For people to, it's happening. And honestly, even in you, maybe you're not feeling the symptoms, but you can still pass it along to other people. So that is something for people to understand. So we will be continuing wearing our masks when we're indoors until otherwise, because I don't know about you, Asma, I have had my kids in the house for almost 18 months and I am ready for them to go back to school. So please, everybody, for the sake of God, wear your masks. But you know, August is one of my really super fun months because we are launching our Muslims in the New series. And we're going to be interviewing and talking to a lot of Muslim moms who work in the news. But we would try to introduce some of us to you and validate the rest. What happens when there's coverage of Muslims in the news? Muslims know most about breaking stories that are meant for us and our kids. And we wanted to share the grief process because, as you know, whenever we hear about something that happens, we're kind of like cringing a little bit internally. Like, what does that mean? How are they going to represent us? Is it even something real? That is, if it's even real? Because sometimes it's not, but it's kind of like we just have that post-traumatic stress where that is concerned. And sometimes we're kind of done with all the emotional upheaval and how that it's going to impact us once a new story is released. So part of what we are going to talk about today, Uzma and myself, just the two of us, is to kind of talk a little bit about how we handle some of the stuff that comes up in the news, how we talk about it with our children, because we know sharing some of our personal stories, our hopes is that you guys can kind of see a little bit of yourself in your own mom's stories. And, you know, we are very thankful for you guys to join today, and we should go from there.
Well, welcome to our audience, because you're coming into a special episode with just us. So we always kick it off with a momming story and a momming philosophy. So for those who don't know Zeba or myself, this is a great opportunity to reconnect or to connect with us. So Zeba, go ahead and tell us your momming story and your momming philosophy.
So everybody knows my mom's story. I am, or at least if you haven't and you're joining us for the first time today, my mom story is I am a mother of four amazing children. My oldest is about to be 18, actually, in 2 weeks. So I just, in my head, I still think I'm an 18-year-old. So I don't know, how is it possible that I have an 18-year-old and I have a lovely daughter, my Zara, and she's 15 and a half. She's about to get her learner's permit.
So scary. Oh my gosh.
Learner's permit. I'm going to have two drivers in my house. And then I have a 10-year-old boy and an 8-year-old boy. And my mom philosophy is essentially, you are doing the best that you can with what you have. Take each day as it can, take each day as it comes. And the reality is, just so you know, you might think you know something, and you'll say, I feel like the best parents are the ones that do not have children, because you always think you're going to know better, do better. And the reality of the situation is we're all doing the best that we can. And part of what we wanted to do here at Momming While Muslim was to kind of create a platform to share, vent, learn from one another, because, you know, we don't have all the answers, but where we don't, we go look for it and hopefully bring it to you. So Uzma, what is your parenting philosophy? Because I know it's a tad bit different than mine.
So my mom's story is pretty close to Zeba's. I also have four children, three boys and a girl. We promised we did not plan that. It just happened. So I have two boys, then the girl, and then the little boy. They are ranging in age from 6 to 13. So yeah, I had them pretty fast and furious. My philosophy is, I don't think I have one, first of all. But if anything, it is to just do what is best for you and what feels right for you, as long as you're willing to stand in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala at the end of the day and say, I made this decision based on this criteria, and I don't think I broke your rules because of X, Y, and Z. That's who I care about. It took a long time to figure out that I was parenting for the sake of the onlookers and yes, not for the sake of the children. And when I got rid of the audience and decided that that audience was not important, you audience are, but that audience and judgment was not important to me anymore, but the little people in front of me were, and I started parenting them instead of parenting for that audience. And I think that's my philosophy. So I do a lot of things that seem out of the ordinary, not completely like Mila and Ashton extraordinary, but I get it. Like, I'm okay with the not bathing every day thing too, but you know, that's for another podcast. So let's go ahead and start talking about some news stories that evoke some very visceral reactions from the Muslim community. And if not from the Muslim community, then certainly for us. So let's review the latest Gaza attacks and the news coverage of this. Zeba, you in particular wanted to talk about the National March for Palestine. Tell us why, and why was news coverage of that particular event important? And what do you think it demonstrates about American media?
So this is the issue. You know, I was always one, you know, Uzma and I chat about this all the time. I'm kind of like, oh, it's not that bad. And perhaps we're reading too much into it. Let's be, you know, thoughtful and blah, 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 you know, until I went to this rally with Uzma. She surprised me that weekend. And we had probably, I would say, what, 25,000 plus?
More than that. I think it was like 30,000, closer to 30,000.
It was packed. Coming together, talking about things, Muslims, Jewish, Christian people. It was an amazing, it was a very positive experience.
It was so touching. Yeah.
And not one, by the way, in the streets of DC, steps
on
from the
Lincoln Memorial.
We marched all the way to the Capitol building, and not one news camera was there. Not one representation of what was going on made it to the news. I mean, I didn't watch the news that day. I was shocked to know that so many of my friends didn't even know there was something, 30,000 plus people, and you didn't even know it was going on in the nation's capital. That was kind of my first, and I agree, I'm coming from a place and a perspective where, you know, I don't have the same experiences as mainstream Muslim people or more visibly Muslim people. So, I want to acknowledge that, but this was my first insight, look into the representation and not being represented, in what's going on. So, you know, Uzma had always talked to me a little bit about this and a lot of my other Muslim friends, and I would listen with a sympathetic and empathetic ear, feeling like maybe there's a little bit more to the story than what they're relaying. And it was the first time I had really experienced that this is true. It wasn't shown or talked about at all. And I was just very, very upset by that process. Regardless of where you are on the issue, the fact that it wasn't even talked about was very shocking to me. But I know, Uzma, for you, it's not like that. And do you want to tell our audience a little bit about where you're coming from and why it isn't as shocking to you?
I mean, it's not shocking because we know that most of our news in America is privatized. So like a lot of private industry or individuals own a lot of our news channels, news publications. And for that reason, whatever your owner says you can do, you're going to do. Whatever your owner allows you to say, you're going to say. Whatever your owner allows you to publish, that's what you're going to publish, right? And so we know that Palestinian rights for the last 73 years have been, have not been an issue that the West is going to promote or going to advance in any way, shape, or form. And just to qualify how we know that there was no major press coverage was because Zeba and I were right behind the press pit. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were up there by the podium, and that's where all the press was. Well, it was a lot of independent press, but CNN, Fox, MSNBC, NBC, CBS, ABC, all the major news channels were not there. There were no reporters from the Post or the Times, or I don't even think USA Today was there, but I might be wrong about that. I think I might have seen their sign somewhere. But, you know, it was disappointing in one way because it was the first time so many of us gathered for Palestine, and we weren't arrested, we weren't pepper sprayed, we weren't beaten. None of that happened. And, you know, the police were like ants getting mm-hmm. away from us, because remember, in DC they had just gone through the Black Lives Matter thing, mm-hmm. and they wanted to, I think they're trying to promote their image. There's that, and then there was the whole independent news sources and social media and people on the ground in Gaza and Palestine showing us, telling us, hey, this is what's actually happening. We are just sitting for our evening fast and we're being shot with rubber bullets, and we didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. We're just eating, you know, or we're just praying, and they are tear gassing us. So I think it was the first time the world saw it. And so there was a concerted effort on the part of the authorities to make sure that they did not advance that aspect, look like the bad guy, basically. So while it was disappointing, it was not surprising, because this is what we have seen our whole lives. We have seen atrocities happen in Palestine on the news, on video, and it got like a blip on the news and then disappeared because nobody's ever held accountable. And it doesn't seem like there's anybody willing to step up to hold to account. So even though there are world powers, quote unquote, if you're not exercising your power and you're not exercising your privilege, then why are you taking up space? Scoot over and give somebody else the seat and the mic. So that's kind of how I felt about it.
No, I agree. And like I said, I was just personally like a little upset by the situation. And it kind of made me start thinking on a personal level, like, let me start delving a little bit more deeply into this and in trying to figure out, you know, what everybody had been talking about until this point. So I agree that we need to have a little bit more of the representation. And I'm glad that we're talking about this and highlighting some of the Muslim moms that are in the news doing the hard work. And I'm really excited and looking forward to hearing their stories as they come up. But, you know, let's go back in time a little bit and talk about the San Bernardino shooting. You know, and we've talked about this personally off camera, off recording. So, you know, Uzma, like, tell me a little bit about what your feelings were about that and how that the fallout of what happened as a result affected your family personally.
Yeah. So, I mean, back in 2015, yeah, granted, that shooting happened later in the year. But if you remember the whole announcement about it, initially, they misnamed the attacker twice. So first they gave him a Turkish nationality by his name, but then they said he was a Qatari citizen. And then they came up with another Pakistani dude's name who was an actual person who lived in San Bernardino, but had nothing to do with it. So like now he's getting attacked and everybody's finding him. And then, oh no, wait, this is the third name. We finally got it right. In the meantime, people are responding on socials and Twitters and like the news, like comments, like, oh, these names, who cares what their name is? They sound Muslim. Get those people the F out of here, you know? And so you've already incited violence, right? By doing this. And Muslims can't come back and say, oh, you incited violence against my people. That second guy, that Pakistani guy who was misidentified, he can't come back and sue. Because, you know, I guess it's like a national security thing and, oh, there's this terror threat. And then this is what blows my mind about it. In what world would the alleged attacker's home be opened up to the media so they can go through and photograph, oh, he had this many copies of the Quran. Oh, he had this many like Islamic illustrations, like, you know, Islamic looking art all over his house. It says Allah's name all over his house. And oh my God, he must have been this crazy, crazy person. And oh, look at that. His wife was involved too. So that kind of takes you back to the whole Orlando gay bar shooting by that Muslim guy. In what world would the spouse of an attacker be arrested and have a case brought against her just for being married to the guy? And I think she had even been divorced because like he was gay, right? So she wasn't even with him and she gets in trouble. So it's kind of like, not only does this San Bernardino shooter get shot, his wife does too. And who knows, was she hostage? Nobody knows because they shot them. And it tells us, yes, I'm a conspiracy theorist. It tells me that there was something to hide. I have watched a lot of 24. And that's why I can tell you that there was a story they needed to hide. Because if the press or you were to come into my house right now, the only art I have up is Islamic art. Because as you know, like a lot of devout Muslims will not have pictures in their house that is considered sacrilegious by them and considered idol worship by them. So they will only have the name of God because the artistic veneration of God is shown through Islamic calligraphy, Islamic mosaicism. We all have that. And yes, I probably have 20 to 30 copies of the Quran in my house because I have different translations. I have different colors. I have different renditions so that my kids can easily learn from it so that I can easily pick it up and read it and hand it out if I freaking want to. That does not make me an extremist or a terrorist or more likely to shoot you. But, you know, the press is going through this man's house, completely messing up a crime scene, by the way, the day of. And like, nobody's come in to catalog anything. Nobody's come in to collect any kind of, you know, artillery or weapons or anything like that. But it's open. That would never happen to a non-Muslim. And then, you know, 2015 was the year that John Ritzheimer collected his anti-Muslim patriots to come and demonstrate outside of a major masjid in my town. So yeah, it was talked about a lot, not just in nationally, internationally. It was also talked about locally, right? It was all over the news. And these basically Nazis who attacked Jews and Muslims equally with equal fervor are, you know, saying all kinds of things about ISIS and Muslims are the ones who do everything bad in the world. Meanwhile, they're stalking a house of worship and preventing the worshipers from getting in safely. That was the year that my son, I think, was in first grade. And he mentioned that he was Muslim, and one of his classmates turned to him and said, "Oh, does that mean you're ISIS?" And so my 7-year-old is coming home to me and saying, "Oh, am I ISIS?" or asking me if he's ISIS. And it's like, no. So now as a mom, I'm having to have this conversation probably a decade earlier than I wanted to with him. Because at the time, you know, we made sure never to have the news on with the kids, and we didn't want them to get scared about anything. We didn't want them to misunderstand. Like, we wanted them to live their lives the way that we were modeling it. And that was a life of worship and service and, you know, kindness. And, you know, that's not what ISIS is. And this was something that I had to explain to him. And it was a very complicated discussion, but I tried to simplify it. It was really traumatic for me as a parent to have to do that as a result of what was going on. And the coverage that was being provided, I believe, I'm convinced, is unequal, disproportionate, and unfair.
Because to talk about like normal people, right, just living their best lives, reading books on vacation, drinking emergency to make sure we don't get anyone, that's not newsworthy, and that's boring. We're boring people. And the concept of sensationalizing something that is quote unquote foreign has probably always been the case. So the fact that we're talking about this and bringing awareness to this, you know, for our non-Muslim audience members, you know, remember, before you repeat something that you think you've heard, there is a person behind that. And it's incumbent for us to kind of minimize that sensationalism. And, you know, when we're talking about it with our kids, you know, how to learn about what's real, what's not real, where to look at these sources. These are something that we as Muslims have to teach our kids every single day, because a lot of them are just normal American Muslim children that are being brought into this, you know, circle, and they don't even know why. And as parents, we have to explain it to them, have these kind of frank, uncomfortable conversations, because they're being, just by their nature, they're being politicized, and they don't even know why. So that is something extra that we as American Muslim moms have to do for our children. But let's go back to that, you know, speaking of children, let's go back to that atomic clock story, you know, like we're going back in time again. Like, how the heck does a teacher not know what a clock is versus what a bomb is? As my daughter would say, shaking my damn heads. Like, you know, that's her new thing, SMH, SMH, everything is SMH. You know, we love teachers here on the podcast. And, you know, but this particular one needs to go back a little bit to school, or maybe get schooled. And I'm going to let Uzma school her a little bit about this story.
So this is doubly sad for me, because it was coming out of Texas, right? Mm-hmm. And this was the story of the little boy. I believe he was 10 or 11. And, mm-hmm. you know, he built an atomic clock as a project for school, because building a clock is hard. For anybody mm-hmm. who hasn't done it, you know, it is not an easy thing to do. And this kid built the atomic clock. And for those who don't know what an atomic clock is, it is this kind of international standard for the most accurate clock there is. There isn't just one, it can be built. And so a lot of us who work in like the business field, or like when I was teaching, we used the atomic clock to set all of the class schedules so that nobody was ever late. Well, when Ahmed Muhammad did it, 14 years old, I take it back. When he built the clock, his teacher heard atomic clock and then called the police. Mm-hmm. Called the police to arrest a 14-year-old. And they did. They put him in handcuffs and took him to the police station. And it was like a big to-do, got a lot of coverage. Like, oh, this Muslim kid at 14, who I believe he was born and raised in the United States, by the way. He built the bomb. Because we have homegrown terrorists, homegrown terrorists, homegrown terrorists. How many times have we heard that since 9/11 happened? And then this kid does it. And just so you know, the Committee on Counterviolence and Extremism that was formed after 9/11, what they have found is that homegrown terrorists are not brown. They're not black. They're not Muslim. They're white supremacists. They're all white supremacists, but they're not allowed to say it. Ask me why. Ask me why.
Why?
Yeah. Yeah. There's an agenda. It's a whole conspiracy, right? Because we can't let the people that are in power, which, by the way, is the minority race on the entire planet, white, we have to protect them. in this bubble. We're not allowed to expose who is actually the homegrown terrorist. Well, in this case, Ayman Mohammed finally, like, you know, his parents pulled him out of school. They pulled him out of the country, because a country that cannot, I think Obama called him to apologize and say, hey, like, you're good. Another university offered him like full tuition and scholarship when he attends there. But his parents left the country with him because they're like, if this nation is not going to educate its teachers to educate its students and keep them safe and just vilify them based on the fact of their religion, then this isn't the country it says it is. And this isn't a country we have to stay in. And this isn't a country whose universities, whose teachers, whose people deserve the brain of my child. So for a long time, America used to import these brains from overseas. Those brains aren't coming back. They are leaving. Those countries that were banned for a very long time, and those brilliant minds are not going to want to come here. And if I was that parent, I would have done the same thing. You don't deserve my child. And it tells me that, you know, schools are not safe for my children. And I am 100% comfortable never letting my kids set foot in a classroom because of something like that that happened. And, you know, in my home state, arguably, it saddens me even more. But, you know, that is just the truth of it. And that's how it affects a lot of the decision making that I have about, you know, my children.
Well, you know, and, you know, just to put, you know, to be play devil's advocate, or to put a more, a different spin to it, you know, I do have kids in mainstream schools, and I've been lucky that they've been supported when things have happened, including my daughter being called a terrorist when she was 5 years old by another, like, but what I'm saying is that there are circumstances where we are getting the support that we need. We are, you know, it's not all bad. So I do want to, you know, pull that back a little bit. But part of the reason is because I, as a personal person, am a huge advocate for my children. And I feel like if you are going to be in mainstream schools, we need more Muslim moms and dads and parents in the PTA so that we have that representation going and being part of the school board, like all of these types of things. And it's going to be hard being that person, that first person, or the person that's advocating. But the reality of the situation is, you know, escaping is not necessarily something that all of us can do. So if you're choosing to stay here, let's stay here, put our face on, and do the hard work. So I want to provide a little bit of that perspective as well. As much as I respect Uzma's decision and I love it, I have to stay here. And so because I'm going to stay here, I'm going to be an advocate for my children as much as I possibly can. But, you know, all these stories are upsetting. And, you know, at some point we get desensitized, right, to some of these school shootings and mass shootings. And it's just so much. But, you know, one of the biggest ones that I remember is the Las Vegas shooting and how terrible that is. So how do you feel about that? I mean, a Muslim person wasn't even involved in that particular shooting.
But do you remember, like, when the story first broke, we all, you know, we held our collective breath. We're like, and this is what happens, you know, in the Muslim community, Muslim American community, this is primarily what's happening. Every time there's an event like that or a mass shooting, even if it's a school shooting, we're all holding our breath. And we know in the school shooting, it's usually not going to be a Muslim kid. But like in these mass public shootings, we're like, oh, Allah, don't let it be a Muslim. Don't let it be a Muslim. Mm-hmm. And then the story breaks. It's not a Muslim, you know, after they like fact check a couple of times and like, oh, wait, it's not a Muslim. And then the media like lets it out that it isn't. Now they have to backtrack because all the stuff that they said, oh, it was so terrorizing. Oh, so many people were terrorized or whatever. Oh, wait, it was a white dude. Oh, pull it back. He
has mental health issue.
Yes, always, right? So we don't ever get to stop grieving. Our collective breath is still held because we're still hoping that justice will be had, that justice will be served, that, you know, the news will actually call a duck a duck and call a terrorist, regardless of his color, regardless of his religion. And how come the white guy's religion is not posted in the headline? You know, because, I mean, let's face it, like the Orlando shooter, he wasn't super religious, right? You know, I mean, he wasn't. And now you have this other dude who maybe is some kind of a fundamentalist, but he's not the right kind of fundamentalist for the news to talk about. And so our grief process, we never get closure. it never ends. And then the next event happens and it just builds and builds and builds until you get the kind of resentment that you're hearing in my voice.
Right. And you know, there are circumstances, and I do want to call that out, where the shooter or the issue is Muslim related, mm-hmm. or they're acting on behalf of Islam, or they're acting on behalf of their
they
Muslims.
Say they are.
They say they are, mm-hmm. you know, so we do also have to deal with that. And, you know, Islam and being Muslim is a huge demographic. And yet all of us, when that does happen, we still have to say, oops, I'm sorry, we didn't mean to. We have to apologize. We have to kind of go through that way. And by the way, we do have to work on those types of things in our communities. And we are trying to do that. And fundamentally here at Mommy Well Muslim, as mothers, we're doing that because we're trying to raise that next generation of American Muslims that don't have, inshallah, by God's will, have these types of issues, but it still happens, and we still have to apologize, and we're still doing that, which also makes it that much more stressful for us. So I just feel like we never get a chance to just be. And I don't know how you feel about that, Uzma.
I mean, we don't, because I feel like for a really long time after 9/11 happened, we were like working really hard on the PR campaign, right? Because before that, we just kept our heads down and worked, like succeed, get strong, build your community. And then the right hand gives so that the left hand doesn't know. So Muslims, since they immigrated here back in the 60s, to Black Muslims, who are the first Muslims in the United States since the era of slavery in America, they have all been working to better their communities, but never got any credit for it, never asked for it. Okay. Now, after 9/11, let's start doing this PR work. And then when that didn't get enough, it's like, wait, nobody is noticing the PR work. That's not getting any news coverage either, because that's mm-hmm. it's not mainstream. It's not important. And like you said, it's really boring. Muslims who are good, that's not making the news. And that's not worth making a movie about, we learned last month on Muslims in Entertainment. So let's look for the Muslims who are speaking up. Why aren't they speaking up? And then even if you do get vocal, and you start making political comments, and you start saying and pointing out to the news, like, hey, this was done wrong, or this was said wrong, or this is not true, then you get vilified, like a particular doctor in my city who lost her job because she spoke up about the truth of Gaza. And, you know, again, when we're talking about generational trauma, her parents are refugees from the 1967 war. And so, you know, she grew up in refugee camps. She made it out. She became a doctor. And then when she speaks out against the atrocities that are happening against Palestinian people and the loss of their civil liberties and human rights, she gets fired for it. Because the right people came after her. The right people with the right connections in the hospital system and in the media came after her. And so that's another thing that we have to worry about. We can't even speak our truth because the risk to our jobs, the risk to our livelihood, the risk to our families, right? Because who knows how many death threats she's gotten. Her social media accounts are all closed. So you can never win. You know, if you don't say anything, you certainly are at a loss. And if you do say something, you risk everything. So that to me is, again, disproportionate coverage or lack of coverage of Muslim Americans. And I'm over it. And I'm so excited about this month where we're going to be talking about how important it is to kind of strike some kind of a balance, a better balance, because when we know better, we can do better. And I feel like when the public is holding the news media and the industry to account and saying, we want both sides, because this is not what we learned in school. This is not fair, and this is not just, and both parties need to be able to come and to argue their cases or to present their cases, or you as the media have the job to provide unbiased news to me, and you haven't been doing that for years, and look what happened to our world. It went to crap. It was not like this when we were growing up in America. It absolutely wasn't. Yes, we grew up disproportionately hating the Soviets back in the 80s.
Yes.
I will say that.
And now that's rubbing off on my number three, who's reading about the Cold War right now.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
He's moved on from World War II and he is now in the Cold War.
Look at that.
He's like, you know, the Soviets. I'm like, honey, let's get there. But I think
we'll get
hilarious.
Him on the War on Terror, our fake War on Terror, as fast as possible, so we could have him on the show this month.
Which is that'll be the next thing. But you know, part of what we have to do with is to have that representation in the media, is to kind of help control the narrative, or, you know, pass the mic to other people that can. And that is kind of what we want to do this month. And we're super excited about being able to do that and having amazing, amazing mamas in the news on this month. And in lieu of the rapid fire, I'm excited to say that you and I are going to be recording together. Yay! Next week. So do you want to tell our audience about what we're doing next week and how excited we're going to be and how grateful we are, speaking of controlling the mic, about this opportunity that we have?
So Zeba and I were selected for the second time to appear at a national, I would say arguably it's an international podcasting conference, and we will be together in person in Nashville, Tennessee, and they have a recording booth on site. So I still have to figure out how we're going to do it on video so you guys can see the fancy schmancy recording studio. I saw it a couple of years back, pre-pandemic, when I went to the conference by myself because Zeba couldn't attend that one. And I saw the recording studios on site and I was like, oh, I wish we could record over there. And now this is our dream come true. We're super excited. We have some private events that we've been invited to by major people who might be on Shark Tank and own a basketball team. So I don't know. We're super excited to meet all these people and see the things that they are doing for radio, TV, communications, podcasting. I think the key word here is communications, because that looks so different now for us than it did when we were growing up, because there's so many more media right now. We know what power it has in the news, and the news that you receive or the stories that you receive. Let's put it that way, because stories a lot of times are going to be a lot more relatable, like ours here on Mommy and Well Muslim, than just if like our entire podcast was my soapbox. It would turn off a lot of you guys. So we're super excited to be recording over there and to be talking, continue to talk about Muslims in the news next week and for the rest of the month. And we hope that you guys will register to see us. You can see us virtually if you would like to. And it's podcastmovement.com, podcast 2021. And if you register with code all caps web secret, then you can see us at a very, very discounted rate virtually on your computers like you did last year. So we're super excited about that.
And then when this airs live, I think we're going to be sharing that link in our comments. So look for the comments below. But I know the funny thing is we are not going to be sharing a room. And why are we not sharing a room, Uzma?
Do you want to tell people about that? You're afraid of like my bodily functions. I'm not sure.
No,
yeah, I booked a room for us together and she dissed me.
And I was like, I said, no, we cannot share a room. And this is why this woman does not sleep. Literally, she is like a vampire. And everybody knows if you've listened to the podcast that I I have to be in bed by nine. So as it is, Uzma's kind of giving me a little bit of a push and saying, you're going to stay up a little bit past nine.
Yes.
So you guys will get to see our stories and what we're doing. And we're really excited to share this journey with you because it's the first time we're able to do this in person. I will be wearing my mask. So know that ahead of time, other than when we're on stage presenting about how podcasting, we can be advocates in the podcasting world. So I am super excited about that. And inshallah, we will see you. I mean, I'm going to see you, Uzma, in a couple of days.
Yes.
So I am hopeful and that we're going to have a lot of fun stories to tell you guys when we get back, inshallah.
Super excited, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us on another episode. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.
Thanks again for joining Zeba and Uzma on Momming While Muslim today.
Please email us your thoughts or questions and follow us on Facebook and Instagram, because this podcast was designed to cater your needs.
Make sure you check out the show notes to find the links and resources for this episode. And remember to help a mama out and leave a review of the show, as well as to like it on your podcast app of choice, because that helps us grow.
Tune in next week for another episode of Momming While Muslim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.